The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Nice to be with you yet again. We've got a couple of new residents here. One more of our students, Matt Castillo, joins us today. My son also traveled with him. He's going to be working with the rest of the family these next few days to finalize our permanent residency status. So after that, I've got to get real serious about taking on a British accent, so we'll see how that goes in the days and weeks and months ahead. Well, the next wave of COVID-19, I'm not sure. I guess the papers today talked about it being the second wave. I thought we were in the third wave. In any event, this wave is surely going to be more deadly, more dangerous than the first one. That's all over the British papers today. This is one quote from, the Telegraph. It says, it's going to be worse this time, more deaths. That's the projection. And we've heard a lot about projections and models, have we not? That is the projection that has been put in front of the Prime Minister, and he is now being put under a lot of pressure to lock down again. So we're almost to the end of October. We're almost into the month of November. You can remember, go back and listen to some of those shows from middle of March, late March. The reasoning going in, we've just got to do it for a few weeks. We've just got to flatten the curve. We've got to save NHS. And never mind the science. I went through some of that with you yesterday. Just pick and choose the scientists that you want to put forward. And now here comes the pressure again on these prime ministers. You may have seen reports yesterday in New Zealand where they're setting up these coronavirus camps. I mean, that sounds like something you do in Wuhan. Camps for, if you're sick, you go into the camp. It's mandatory. The madness, it seems, never ends. It just continues. It's like the world is paralyzed. When will it snap out of this paralysis? From the Telegraph today, family Christmas gatherings that breach COVID rules will be broken up, the authorities warn. So you've got people talking about, well, not just here, but also in the United States. Did you say you had the clips? Here's Mayor de Blasio yesterday in New York, clip 13.
So, most importantly, I want to recommend to all New Yorkers, it's not business as usual. I hate to say it, but I have to urge all New Yorkers, do not travel out of state for the holidays. Do not travel to a state with a high infection rate. Do not travel to a country with a high infection rate.
Don't go anywhere. Just stay where you are. Another wave is coming. And so New York's got to lock it down. You've got one of the police chiefs, by the way. He's just down the road from us here in Solihull. I think he presides over Solihull and Coventry. But he predicts that it's very likely there could be civil unrest in the West Midlands in the near future, adding that the turning point for a lot of people could be if they're made unemployed when the furlough scheme ends later this month. He said the force was on heavy alert for the unexpected. This is from one of the local papers this morning. He's just looking at the public sentiment. And then the length of this self-imposed lockdown. We're sitting on a time bomb here, he said. We're getting very near the stage where you could see a considerable explosion of frustration and energy. Things are very on the edge. in a lot of communities, and it wouldn't take very much to spark off unrest, riots, and damage. It's just a ticking time bomb, he says. And you have the media playing their part, talking about all the super spreader events in the United States with Trump rallies and so on. The Philadelphia riots, that's okay. You know, taking to the streets. By tens of thousands taking to the streets. So long as the Dodgers win the World Series, that's okay. You can celebrate that face to face. Get right up close to one another. Lord Sumption, we've mentioned him before, played clips from him, I think. He gave a speech last night about how the UK government has handled this crisis. And he said that the lockdown has been the most significant interference with personal freedom in the history of our country. The most significant interference. He says, we've never sought to do such a thing before, even in wartime, and even when faced with health crises far more serious than this one. We've never taken this kind of action. And yet the pressure is intense on Boris Johnson to lock it down again. Lord Sumption says the British public has not even begun to understand the seriousness of what is happening to our country. Many, perhaps most of them, don't care and won't care until it's too late. They instinctively feel that the end justifies the means, the motto of every totalitarian government which has ever been. One last quote that I'll give to you, because I just wanted to emphasize this following yesterday's show, where, remember, Solzhenitsyn talked about the decline of courage in our nations. Sumption says, historically, fear has always been the most potent instrument of the authoritarian state. This is what we're witnessing today. But the fault is not just in our government, it's in ourselves. Fear provokes strident demands for abrasive action, much of which is unhelpful or damaging. It promotes intolerant conformism. So here we are, even individually, as he says, we're just cowering in fear. Or decline in courage, to take the words of Solzhenitsyn from 42 years ago. A decline in courage may be the most striking feature which an outside observer notices in the West in our days. We've lost courage. We've lost our strength. And as I was saying on yesterday's program, if you look at the prophecies in Leviticus 26, where God says he's broken our will. My father, of course, has emphasized the importance of courage. Solzhenitsyn said, such a decline in courage is particularly noticeable among the ruling groups and the intellectual elite, causing an impression of loss of courage by the entire society. Must one point out, he says finally, that from ancient times, a decline in courage has been considered the first symptom of the end. Lord Sumption talked about fear, our people cowering in fear. Solzhenitsyn warned about this decline in courage, and we're certainly seeing that today. There's a few notable exceptions, as I noted yesterday. Donald Trump, for example, is encouraging people to get on with their lives. He doesn't want to see the United States paralyzed by coronavirus. I thought this was interesting, both from the way the media covered it and just in looking at the way the White House is talking about COVID-19. This is from The Hill. It says, the White House science office listed ending the COVID-19 pandemic as the top accomplishment of President Trump's first term. So they're already talking about it as if it's in the past. Even as I say, you see all the headlines over here today saying another wave, it's going to be even more deadly. The models tell us. And here's the White House saying this is one of his big accomplishments. And then you listen to the Hill's coverage, even as the U.S. has set records for new daily infections, and numerous hospitals across the country are stretched to their breaking points. So you know where the Hill stands. You know where the media, where they are on this. And in the United States, at least, well, I guess we'll find out in 7 days or so, or however long it takes to tally all the votes. We'll find out how many Americans really and truly do agree with the president or with Joe Biden. Joe Biden is like the UK newspapers. We got to mask it up. We got to lock it down. We need more mandates. 1 week from today, will we know who the U.S. president will be? Or is it going to drag out for days or perhaps weeks? There was a ruling this week, by the way, from the Supreme Court on the Wisconsin late ballots. Some of these states are, there's activist judges saying that you should count ballots for as long as they come in, or if they come in days after November the 3rd, if they're dated after November 3rd, you still have to accept them. And the Supreme Court, this time John Roberts agreed with the conservative justices. He didn't do so with Pennsylvania in an earlier ruling. In any event, the Supremes ordered a stay on the Wisconsin Circuit Court ruling that the state cannot accept ballots past Election Day. As I say, there was this activist judge that ruled that the state must accept ballots that are turned in up to 6 days after the Election Day. 6 days late. And this one judge says you've got to, even though the rules established by the Wisconsin legislature, the rules state, no, it has to happen by Election Day. There's a deadline. So one judge says, nope, we've got to take in those late ballots. And a district court says no to that. And the Supreme Court backed up that lower court. So there you go. We'll see now if there's any action taken by the RNC in Pennsylvania. And it'll be interesting, I guess, once you're sworn in, you go straight to work. So they've got the new justice there, Amy Coney Barrett, and now a pretty solid conservative majority, particularly if Roberts, although it's unclear why he voted one way with Pennsylvania and then basically took the opposite position with Wisconsin. But still, there's five others that are pretty solidly conservative. So we will see. Pennsylvania, I think, is probably one of the states that maybe is open for the most nefarious activity following the election next Tuesday evening. That said, it's been fascinating to watch that particular state, and we've had quite a few email exchanges around here just because President Trump's been there for multiple rallies. They had the debate a while back where Vice President Biden or former Vice President Biden said that he was going to do away with the oil and gas industry, and then he lied about fracking. And of course, this is important to a lot of people in particularly Western Pennsylvania. This is a story from the New York Times, and you know all the mainstream media outlets, they're still right in step with the polls. The polls have Biden way out in front. But there's also a few that are getting a little bit nervous. Well, what if this is a replay of 2016? Because he was way behind in the polls in 2016 as well. This is from the New York Times. It says, the poll, Can We Trust Pennsylvania's Polls? They show Joe Biden clinching crucial counties. So why does it feel so different on the ground here? This is written by someone who's from Pennsylvania. It says, polls show Mr. Biden leading by 5 to 13 points, but I grew up around here and am dubious. This place, the land of hoagies and Bradley Cooper and Rocky Balboa worship and Tina Fey's cousin Karen accent has transmogrified into Trumplandia. It says he has so much more support than in 2016 because it's been 4 years of accomplishments. That's quoting a homemaker. Who's going to vote for Donald Trump. The Times says they were part of a caravan that had just encircled the Democrats' rally to say bye-bye to Biden and let his supporters know they were outnumbered. Pollsters say that suburban women are President Trump's kryptonite, that they've turned on him. At another Pennsylvania rally, the president pleaded, "Suburban women, will you please like me?" And really, the press twisted that statement a bit. He wasn't begging. He was more of a, it was more of a joke. In any event, it says here, "I feel like that's wrong, the polling. We're the majority," said Jennifer Girard, a single mother working in consumer goods. Well, then it goes on to quote quite a few others. So can you trust the polls in Pennsylvania? Can you trust the polls, the national polls? The Economist yesterday, it said, right now our models think Joe Biden is very likely to beat Donald Trump in the Electoral College. And you know what the percentages are? 96% chance for Biden to win. And poor Donald Trump, he's only got a 4% chance of winning. That's The Economist. I have copied this link into a document for next week because I will be anxious to come back to it if The Economist ends up spectacularly wrong. 96%? This is from Politico. It says, "The president is scrambling. The challenger is not. It's a jarring role reversal. The president's the one scrambling. He's desperate." I guess they think Joe Biden is very presidential. It says Donald Trump is chasing every possible opening across the electoral map. Joe Biden is sitting on his lead, carefully surveying the landscape for states that might serve as insurance policies. It says further on, "Biden is doing fewer and smaller events and even peering past the election toward governing." So they're all but ready for a Biden presidency. The Biden campaign, they're preparing for it. They keep putting a lid on the campaign, then they open the lid up a little bit after the president shames them, I guess, into making an appearance. He's just relentlessly going on about Biden in the basement. And so he's been coming out, and he was asked about his relatively light schedule, and you can tell it's a little bit of a sensitive subject for him. Here's clip 9.
You kept a relatively light public schedule in the past few days. Can you give us a sense of how much you'll be traveling in the next few days, where you might be going?
I just told you where I was going to be traveling, and I, by the way, I traveled the last few days, too.
Are you going to Iowa, sir?
I'm going to be going to Iowa. I'm going to Wisconsin. I'm going to Georgia. I'm going to Florida, and maybe other places as well. We're constantly, there's not been a day that hadn't been a 12-hour day yet.
I'm not sure what that last statement means exactly, but here again, I think the Trump campaign would look at that and say, we're running circles around him. And he has been missing from action. And when he comes out, there have been plenty of gaffes. There have been plenty of statements where he loses his train of thought, like this particular instance on Monday, clip 10.
Here's the deal. One of the things that is important is that... keep in mind, although they're going to vote on Barrett, I think today.
So he loses his train of thought, and his handlers come along and say, "All right, keep moving. Off to lunch. Let's do it. Let's go." That was just from Monday, the vote that he mentioned there on Barrett, that I believe was Monday night. But then he comes out, as I say, yesterday he went to Georgia for this campaign event. And again, whoever staged this, it just looks pretty pathetic. Here's clip 11. So is it a rally, or is it a hula hoop convention? All these rings, all these circly things, as one commentator said, and most of them, no doubt, press people. Hardly anyone. He goes all the way down to Georgia, and hardly anyone is there. He's way ahead, though. That's all that you need to know as far as the media go. Here's The Hill. Well, here's someone taking exception with that narrative. It says here, we predict that President Trump is going to win the 2020 presidential election and win big. While the majority of polls suggest the Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden is leading, or at best that it's close, those polls suffer from at least three problems. And then it goes on and talks about the problems, the way they ask the questions, the way that some people just want to kind of say something to someone else on the other end of the line that might be more accepted, that might be received better. Well, as I've said in recent programs, going back to the one we had on Monday, you look at the picture, even though they're carefully framed, as I said, still you can see the level of support. I love those tweets that the Trump campaign sends out. The people that, I mean, there's obviously all those at the rally, but the people that line up early in the morning and how that this line just goes on, in some cases, for miles. And then how many are turned away? The Trump campaign also has been pointing to the fact that there's quite a few voters. I think already 72 million people have voted early in the United States. It just looks like the turnout, because of all the votes that or the ballots that were mailed out and the people voting early because of COVID and all that, it just seems like the turnout for this one's going to be massive. We'll see, I guess, by the end of next week. But there's this story that some outlets have reported that people are having second thoughts about how they voted, and President Trump's convinced that it's the Biden voters who are seeing all of this scandalous revelations about Hunter Biden and the Biden family, these business dealings with communist Chinese energy firms or companies backed by the communist Chinese state. We played those clips for you last week of Tony Bobulinski. Tucker Carlson sat down with him. I think his whole show was devoted to sitting down with this whistleblower, this business operator, or this he worked together with the Biden family. He was a partner in that Sinohawk company. In dealings with all of those energy firms, or that energy firm, I should say specifically, I think it's CEFC. In any event, Tucker's asking him about why he came forward, and Bobulinski said, "What made me come forward is when Adam Schiff and others came out and said, after the laptop was discovered, that this is all Russian disinformation." And Bobulinski didn't like having his name, his family, associated with some kind of Russian attack. He's like, it is what it is. The contents on the laptop, they are there. The emails, I've been a part of a lot of these email exchanges. It's real. It actually happened. You'll see in this first clip the statement that Adam Schiff makes about it being, you know, a Russian disinformation campaign. And then you'll hear Bobulinski's response, clip one.
This whole smear on Joe Biden comes from the Kremlin.
I held a top secret clearance from the NSA and the DOE. I served this country for 4 years in one of the most elite environments in the world, Naval Nuclear Power Training Command. And to have a congressman out there speaking about Russian disinformation, or Joe Biden at a public debate referencing Russian disinformation, when he knows he sat face to face with me, that I was traveled around the world with his son and his brother, to say that and associate that with my name is absolutely disgusting to me.
So that's why he came forward. And as he explains in the interview, the weekend before the New York Post revealed the story about the laptop, Bobulinski said that he called Rob Walker, and he's an advisor to the Biden family, a Biden family representative. He called him up and he said, look, I want Schiff to retract that statement. I want Schiff to backtrack away from that. Actually, this might have been the weekend right after the New York Post revelation, because that came out. And then Schiff said, all right, this is just a Russian disinformation campaign. And then Bobulinski says, well, hang on a second, because I was right there working with that family. And if they're saying this is an attack from Russia, I don't want to be associated with that at all. So he calls this Biden family rep. His name is Rob Walker. And he says, Schiff's got to retract that statement. And if he doesn't retract it by the end of this weekend, then I'm going to come forward and blow the whistle. And there's actually a tape recording of the conversation that Bobulinski has with Rob Walker. Tucker played it. It's just a short clip, but he played it last night on his show. Here's clip two.
If he doesn't come out on record, I am providing the fact.
Tony, you're just going to just bury all of us, man.
You're going to bury all of us, said the Biden representative. Don't say it. Don't come forward. If you do, you will bury us. And keep in mind, as you hear these clips, the press is totally, totally disinterested. You backtrack 4 years, and all it took was a flimsy dossier full of lies, and they ran with it. Forget about verifying it. Well, it's an attack on Donald Trump. It gives us an excuse to attack the president, or president-elect at the time. They ran with the dossier, and here you have this pile of evidence, and it just keeps getting bigger. You are going to bury us, and it's on tape. It's on a recording. It's pretty amazing. And then again, Bobulinski, he went on to say, look, I'm not trying to hurt this family, and I know that Walker was under a tremendous amount of stress at that time, but I just wanted a retraction. If you're gonna come out and have an answer for all of this vile content on a laptop computer that was abandoned at a computer repair shop, then you better come up with something other than this is a Russian disinformation campaign. Listen to a bit more from the sit down last night with Bobulinski, clip three.
The Chinese and CFC never viewed me. I'm insignificant and irrelevant in this discussion. To them, it was always the Biden family. It wasn't Hunter Biden. It wasn't Jim Biden. It was the Biden family, who's obviously led and operated by Joe Biden. And in a document that you guys have, and I think it's been provided to the world, the Chinese referenced that because of their trust in the Biden family, that Chairman Yi and Director Zhang are excited about moving forward in this. And in that document, they reference loaning $5 million to the BD family.
Right.
The BD family is the Biden family. And notice they didn't say we're loaning that money to Oneida Holdings, or we're loaning that money to Tony Bobulinski, or we're loaning that money to James Gillier or Rob Walker. They, once again, not a document generated by me, a document generated by CFC, that they're loaning that money to the Biden family.
A document, and it's in the hands of those Fox reporters. The loan, millions of dollars we're talking about, to the Biden family. There was more tape of a phone conversation yesterday. It has quite a lot of profanity in it, but it's Hunter Biden on the phone talking about him representing Dr. Patrick Ho, the spy chief of China. His firm representing the spy chief of China. And the media yawn. And the media look at that and say, well, there's no way the family could in any way be compromised. There's no way. There's no way the Chinese Communist government could use this as leverage should Vice President Biden win the presidency. There's no way they could blackmail the Biden family. It's already happened. It's already happened. We're talking about massive amounts of money laundering and influence peddling, this pay-for-play scheme This is not just unethical behavior. These are crimes that have been committed. And the media would have you say, or believe rather, that here's the front runner. He's going to be president. And everything that you're seeing, those documents, everything you're hearing, those phone recordings, everything that you're seeing on video, everything that's on that laptop, it's all a Russian smear. It's all an attack. It's all just disinformation. You can't believe it. It's not verified, so we're not even going to talk about it. Well, it's getting out, even if the New York Times and the Washington Post and CNN and MSNBC do their level best to cover it up. Tucker Carlson, I believe the last ratings report I saw for his program, he's been averaging lately over 5 million viewers, which is just off the charts for, you know, a nightly cable newscast. The most popular nightly news show on television. So it's getting out. Here's another snippet from his interview, clip 4.
And this is a company with direct connections to the communist government of China. So the former vice president has said he had no knowledge whatsoever of his son's business dealings and was not involved in them at all. But this sounds like direct involvement in them.
Yeah, that's a blatant lie. When he states that, that is a blatant lie. Obviously, the world's aware that I attended the debate last Thursday. And in that debate, he made a specific statement around questions around this from the president. And I'll be honest with you, I almost stood up and screamed liar and walked out because I was shocked that after 4 days or 5 days that they prepped for this, that the Biden family is taking that position to the world.
That position being that this is a Russian smear. If you remember the quote that I gave to you yesterday or the day before, you put Russia or Putin together with Giuliani and Donald Trump, and well, quite obviously, this is an attack from Moscow. And Bob Alinsky, who was right there in the mix, he was right there working with that family. They recruited him. He says, I'm not going to be a part of this. They're lying. And he's pleading on this interview with Tucker, just come forward and answer for yourselves. Put the evidence out there. If no crimes were committed, if everything was completely above board, then present the evidence. But the emails and the videos and the recordings coming in, it's just so damning, all of it. And as Bob Alinsky brings out, it wasn't just that he knew Joe Biden. He was the big guy. He was the chairman. He was the chairman of the company. The deals were with the Biden family, the Biden empire. Here's clip 5.
So you've said that they wanted you to meet Joe Biden as a way to induce you to participate in this deal. You were the actual business guy here who had management experience, deal experience. But it also sounds like Joe Biden was vetting you to some extent.
Yes, of course. Like, I didn't request to meet with Joe. They requested that I meet with Joe. And, you know, he's putting his, and Hunter says this in writing, it was referenced multiple times, they were putting their entire family legacy on the line. They knew exactly what they were doing. They were dealing with a Chinese-owned, you know, enterprise run by Chairman Yi, CFC, that had strong financial support and political support from the Chinese Communist Party. That's how it was presented to me. That's not my own words. That's how they presented it to me and read me in on it. And
they being Gillier and Hunter
they
Biden.
They being Hunter Biden, who was very proud of that and taking credit for it when I sat with him for 2 hours on the patio of the Chateau Marmont in L.A.
Proud that they were doing a deal with the Chinese Communist Party?
Well, proud that they were, that he had the relationship with Chairman Yi, who was running CFC, and the ability for them to get deals done around the world and stuff like that.
They had all the connections, because keep in mind, Vice President Biden at the time was Vice President Biden. So they had the connections, but they needed the businessman. They needed the CEO. They needed someone who actually could run a business, Hunter couldn't do that. He was just the collector. He was the bag man. He came in at the last minute to get all the money and then to distribute it out to the family. Of course, I'm sure Joe Biden never touched a penny directly from the Chinese. It came through Hunter. He's the conduit. Look at the evidence. Look at the documents. Look at the emails. And look at the response from the Biden family. Look at their defense, or lack of it. Russian disinformation. That, as Bobulinski says, is disgusting. You have the laptop handed to them by Hunter Biden, signed by Hunter Biden, Hunter Biden's attorney calling the repair shop after it hit the news, give me the computer back. And then you have all of these emails. Now you have Bobulinski's three cell phones with all the content on those. And we're supposed to believe that nothing here can be verified? You would think this would be, if you're a smart reporter out there somewhere, you would think that this would be the opportunity of a lifetime. This is like Watergate on steroids. Now listen to the real explosive exchanges from last night's interview. Here's clip six.
And I'm thinking about the Biden family. Like, how are they doing this? I know Joe decided not to run in 2016, but what if he ran in the future? Aren't they taking political risk or headline risk? And I remember looking at Jim Biden and saying, how are you guys getting away with this? Like, aren't you concerned? And he sort of, he looked at me and he laughed a little bit and said, plausible deniability.
How do you get away with this? Because, you know, your brother or your father, he's vice president, and if he wants to run for president at some point, he didn't do it in 2016, but he's doing it this year. How are you going to get away with this? Well, we'll lie about it, said Jim Biden. The brother, plausible deniability. We'll just lie. We'll just say there's no truth to it. We'll just say it's a Russian smear. No problem. Listen to Tucker Carlson's reaction, and then again, Bobulinski continues, clip seven.
He said that out loud?
Yes, he said it directly to me, one-on-one in a cabana at the Peninsula Hotel after about a, you know, hour and a half, two-hour meeting, with me asking, out of concern, how are you guys doing this? Aren't you concerned that you're going to put your brother's, you know, future presidential campaign at risk? You know, the Chinese, the stuff that you guys have been doing already in 2015 and 2016 around the world. And I just can almost picture his face where he sort of chuckles and says, you know, plausible deniability.
So he said, this is a man who's been drafting off his brother's political career for almost 50 years. He said to your face, essentially, we're lying about it.
Anyone watching this interview can look up what plausible deniability means, yeah. And the definition is very distinct.
Yes, it's pretty distinct. We're lying. We'll lie about it. Now, you compare that testimony, if we can call it that, with the defense. They had 4 or 5 days, and then we learned. The media was, they were putting it out there. This is an attack from Russia. How do you know? We don't have the evidence, but boy, it sure has the signs of being a Russian disinformation attack, said John Brennan. They signed that document. They lied. And then, and what really got under Bobulinski's skin, because he worked with them, is they had 5 days. They had 5 days or so to come up with a response. How do you explain yourselves? And Joe Biden just took what the media fed him with and said during that debate that this is an attack from Russia. And that's the statement that nearly made Bobulinski stand up and say, you're a liar. Listen to Tucker Carlson. This is the last clip as he asks him, well, how do you feel like that this impacts his ability to lead as a president should he be elected next week? Clip eight.
If Joe Biden is elected president, which could very well happen, how does this constrain his ability to deal with China?
Are you asking for my personal opinion?
I am. I'm asking for your opinion as someone who's worked with the Chinese.
So I think Joe Biden and the Biden family are compromised. Obviously, I've referenced that I held a Q clearance. You're briefed on compromise and, you know, who you're able to talk with and deal and do business with. And I just don't see, given the history here and the facts, how Joe can't be influenced in some manner based on the history that they have where here with CFC and stuff like that.
Of course, he's compromised. You can look back at the Trump campaign's playing ads where Mr. Biden's just praising the Chinese over and over and over again. He has been bought by the communist Chinese government. He's been paid off. He's already compromised. These are crimes that, as I've said over the past week, crimes where people should be serving a long time in prison, in jail. But they get away with it. They keep getting away with it. The Clinton Foundation got away with it. The Biden family got away with it, continues to get away with it. And nothing is ever done. Donald Trump Jr., he tweeted out last night, I presume this was after he viewed that interview, he said, the evidence of corruption against Joe Biden is 100,000 times stronger than anything they fabricated on me and my family, and we went through 3 years of lies and you know what because of it. It's time to show there's equal justice under the law and investigate. Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens with him and his family, the Biden family, and we'll see. We'll certainly see what happens with the U.S. presidential election in less than a week. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
We're doing a lot of work right now, and I'm involved in all of those deals. The beauty is it's peace in the Middle East with no money and with no blood. There's no blood all over the sand. And it's happening. No, we have a 5 definites, and I think we'll have another 5 pretty much definites too. And all of them, the big ones, the smaller ones, and the 3 that we got, really, I have great respect. So, yeah, we're very excited about it. And we did it a much different way than they've been working over the last 30 years.
That's President Trump from yesterday talking about his approach to peace in the Middle East. 3 nations, of course, 3 enemies of Israel have signed on to make peace with Israel. And the president there says there's probably 5 more nations coming, maybe 10. I mean, This is historic, as he said. We haven't seen this in decades. This is a new world in the Middle East. And yet the media, what are they going to do with this? Well, they'll just smother it like they would the Hunter Biden laptop. Nothing to report here. Or if they do, they'll say, well, the president says this is another victory for his campaign or for his administration. 5 to 10 more nations? And you remember the comments from John Kerry as we played yesterday? There is no way this can happen. It just cannot happen. You have to go through the Palestinians first. Well, how does that statement look now? I just saw the tweet here from the president. He says, COVID, COVID, COVID is the unified chant of the fake news, lamestream media. They will talk about nothing else until November 4th, when the election will be hopefully over. Then the talk will be about how low the death rate is, plenty of hospital rooms, and many tests of young people. They'll change their tune. They'll pivot on a dime. It's no problem for them to do that. Look at how they can focus on one thing one day and then ignore it the next. The media. Yesterday I talked in that segment on Solzhenitsyn. I gave to you his quote from 1978, what he said about the media, about their coverage, about what motivates them. He says, hastiness and superficiality, this is Solzhenitsyn, these are the psychic diseases of the 20th century, and more than anywhere else, this is manifested in the press. In-depth analysis of a problem is anathema to the press. It is contrary to its nature. The press merely picks out sensational formulas. They just pick it out, and it's got to fit in with their worldview, their agenda, and then they trumpet it. I just saw a tweet right underneath the one I just read. Biden is up 17 points in a new Wisconsin poll. 17 points in Wisconsin. He has no chance in Wisconsin, evidently. Who can believe this kind of thing? And it's happened just 4 years ago. They made complete fools of themselves. 17 points. Wow. I'm surprised the president's even campaigning anymore. It says here from Solzhenitsyn's speech, such as it is, however, the press has become the greatest power within Western countries, exceeding that of the legislature, the executive, and the judiciary. Well, you remember what he said. I gave it to you yesterday. They have all of this power, and none of them are elected. None of them. And none of them are corrected either. We could add that. If they're proven wrong, they will not come back and apologize for it. They just dust themselves off and move on. What was it that Nate, did I even give you that at the beginning? I thought I had that tweet from Nate Silverman. He's the guy that runs the 538 website. He's, I guess, known for all the predictions that he makes. And yet, you look at what happened in 2016, and you look at what's probably going to happen again this year. Well, I can't find it. In any event, he said, I mean, at this point, He said at this point, if Donald Trump somehow wins, I mean, the polling's just going to have to be way off, even more so than it was in 2016, or he somehow has to cheat to get the victory. I mean, they're already setting people up. You can almost see how they're going to react. If Donald Trump does win, they're going to come right out and say, well, that was impossible. That's impossible. So he must have cheated. And then maybe they'll come forward with the Russian thing again. It's worked for them before. Even when it's proven to be false, they still go with it. Well, what's behind this laptop? You mean you have Hunter Biden himself dropping off a computer and then not retrieving it, and then Hunter Biden's lawyer calling the computer shop saying, give me the computer, and this is a Russian attack? So Russia sent Hunter? Russia sent the lawyer of Hunter to call the shop? And what about Bobulinski? I guess he's a Russian agent as well. This is why he came forward. It's got to stop, he said. Russia went on for 3 years. And so here it is, their favorite excuse. Must be the Russians. What did they say when Mitt Romney in 2012 considered Russia a threat? Obama just ridiculed him to his face. The Cold War's over. Come on, man. That was just 2012. Wasn't that long ago. They'll talk about, remember him leaning over, saying to Medvedev, just give me a little more time after the election. I'll have a lot more flexibility. And I mentioned the tweet from NBC News the other day. Oh, they're trumpeting that because Putin said, hey, there was no corruption in the business dealings between Moscow and the Biden family. So now Putin's on their side. When he's on their side, you know, he's a little bit of an adversary, but you know, he's not really the most dangerous threat we're facing. But if the tables are reversed, this is the media today. They have more power than even government leaders. My father said this. This is from his 1998 piece about the Solzhenitsyn speech. He said, we are not truly ruled by those people we vote into office. The press has the greatest power, but this is a symptom of a far deeper problem. So we can't just say the press is there's the quote, the 1980s called, they want their foreign policy back. That's what Obama said to Romney. He said that in 2012. But in 2016, I mean, we were coming under attack. It was Russia meddling is the only reason that Donald Trump won. And then Brennan unleashed this hasty investigation to prove that they had meddled in the election, and this is all in the last couple of months of Obama's administration, and they not only meddled, they meddled in favor of the Trump administration. They helped Donald Trump to win. Donald Trump was compromised. Donald Trump was a Russian agent. He had been bought off. And then they have all this evidence, which basically proves exactly that, except with the Biden family in China, and it can't be verified. This is unbelievable. It's exactly, Herbert Armstrong used to say it, my father's talked about it, because we know the tactics of the devil. He is the accuser, as it says in Revelation 12. He accuses people, and what does he accuse them of? Of exactly what he is guilty of himself. So that's what we see happening. Solzhenitsyn in that speech, I couldn't get to this yesterday, I ran out of time, but he went on to talk about our collapsing morals and how that we exalt the freedom to sin above all else. We've got to be free to do anything except leave our houses during COVID. But in any other instance, we've got to be free to indulge in any kind of sin. It says, the defense of individual rights has reached such extremes as to make society as a whole defenseless, against certain individuals. It is time in the West to defend not so much human rights as human obligations. What about our obligations? What about our responsibilities? And isn't it amazing, even those human rights, those freedoms are beginning to evaporate away as these authoritarian regimes come in and strike fear in the hearts of the citizens. Just do what we say. You either get tested or you're going into the camp. That's where it's headed in New Zealand. It says here, on the other hand, destructive and irresponsible freedom has been granted boundless space. Society has turned out to have a scarce defense against young people, such as motion pictures full of pornography, crime, and horror. This is all considered to be part of freedom. Look at what this man was able to see. It was like a prophetic speech, as you heard yesterday. And then, of course, my father comes along 20 years later. He points back to that speech and says, look, we better consider also what our Bible says about the human heart. It's not just communism that's evil and fatally flawed. It's not just socialism. It's not just the radical left, liberalism, progressivism. It's all of us. All of us. It's the plague of the human heart. Jeremiah 17:9. Jeremiah warned us. He warned us that the problem here is sin. The problem here is that deceitful human heart that is hostile to God, that is hostile to the laws of God, Romans 8 and verse 7 as well. My father said this in his 1998 piece. He has suffered as few have in this modern world, speaking of Solzhenitsyn, and he learned some profound lessons in the process. He learned some profound lessons, and my father related a lot of these in that 1998 piece, the speech that shocked America and Britain. I think you can still get to that on the trumpet.com website. I think it goes that far back. In any event, if not, we'll make sure that we make it available at thetrumpet.com. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to submit feedback, email us, td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.